I think it would be very helpful to understand a couple things. One is your consultative approach supported by data and metrics? Meaning your actions, your conversations, do you try to find intent and insights first as you prepare these conversations to become more consultative? Or is it a combination of asking a question, hearing the answer, and then building the conversation from there? Which really requires a lot of experience in order to know how to navigate that. So I would love for you to talk about, first of all, your experiences working as a consultative evangelist, as you call it, and what that means in terms of advancing people into the pipeline.
It's very easy as a salesperson, I think, to fall into the trap of wanting to be the expert in the room. I think it's natural. I think when you go to a client, you want to seem like you're the expert. And obviously, what are you an expert in? You're an expert in your products and services. Right. So what happens then is you tend to kind of dominate the conversation with your products and services. The problem with that is then you don't really get to the core of, you know, what the challenges are for your clients and really understand, you know, initially whether you are a good fit for them. And if you are a good fit, how you're a good fit for them. So I definitely think that doing research in the first element is crucial. And actually kind of understanding before you go into a meeting, you know, who are you speaking to, what markets are they operating in, how you can help. I actually think quite a lot of this comes even before you kind of reach out to a client. I think a lot of it comes when you first start at a new company in the onboarding process from a kind of management perspective. Mm-hmm. My experience with sales teams generally is that the onboarding for, you know, a sales rep will be very much kind of focused on your product, your company, your service, what you do, et cetera.
Right.
Rather than actually kind of learning as much as you could about the customers you're selling to in their market. And their
Sorry,
I think someone agrees with me. and so I definitely think that, you know, the first piece is almost like an enablement piece when sales reps first join a company is actually during that onboarding process, making sure that there is enough time allocated to learning about who you're actually selling to, what kind mm-hmm. of challenges they're facing, et cetera, as well as learning about your products and services. I think that's the first thing. The second thing, as we were saying, is coming to those meetings prepared. Now, that's not always easy, particularly if you're an SDR and you're, you know, targeted with 1,000 calls a day. You know, how would you possibly do enough research into one client to kind of justify, you know, a good conversation.
Right.
I think tools like SimilarWeb do help with that. We have what's called an insights generator, which actually provides insights to you. So a click of a button, you can find an interesting insight, which you can then put into an email cadence. There's definitely ways around that. But then to your point, absolutely, when you're face-to-face with the client, whether that's obviously on Zoom these days or whether you're, you know, going into, you know, speaking to a client or speaking to on the phone, very, very important that, you know, I would almost spend, if you can, 90% of the time listening to what your client's saying and 10% of the time talking, if you can, and almost mm-hmm. challenge yourself to kind of, you know, the next meeting that you have, try and speak a little bit less or try and ask more relevant questions.
Right.
Because that's really where you can start to learn about your, you know, your clients. And a lot of the time you will find that your clients are very happy to talk about what they do. They will appreciate the fact that you're taking an interest in what they're doing, that you're not just kind of babbling about your products and services. And so it's not just a case of asking any old question. It's about asking the right question, of course. But I think it's about spending a lot less time talking yourself and actually letting your clients give you all the information. And then what you'll find is that there'll be common threads between certain clients you're speaking to. So you won't always necessarily have to do as much in-depth research into right. kind of similar clients, because there'll be common threads that you can take into meetings. And then actually you can speak more on a peer-to-peer level about, well, actually I was speaking with client X who's in a similar market with similar challenges, and this is what they're doing and this is how we're helping them.
Yeah.
So you're speaking on a far more kind of peer-to-peer level. So I think it definitely runs across those three areas, really.
Okay. You know, it's interesting that you said that about the 1,000 calls a day from an SDR perspective. It is virtually impossible for them to, especially, you know, if they're following a model that is transactionally based, they're trying to reach as many people as possible, and they don't really know who they're going to get in touch with. And especially some of the tools, especially here in the States, that we still use, where we dial until we get a body. And if we didn't feed our sequence or cadence with like people, and we end up with a customer experience person on one call and then an IT person on the next call, it's kind of hard to switch gears that quickly. But, so tell me a bit about this research part, because back in the day, that's when I was in selling, which was 100 years ago, practically now, we definitely did a lot of research up front. And even though we were the evangelists of the product, because there was no internet when I was selling, we were the people that they came to for information. We were the folks that had the in-depth knowledge of the products, the industry, the competition. So there was more of an implied trust there. But we still did a lot of research up front. I spend many a night in the library, because we didn't have internet, to do some research on particular clients I was chasing or particular roles and what their workflows look like. So I did spend a lot of time researching, and it was probably, for me personally, it was hours of research for particularly one client, depending on how big they were, the cost of the, the average deal size, et cetera. What is a typical flow that you think works nowadays with the internet, with tools? About how much time do people need to spend in that pre-prep stage before they actually start a conversation?
Thankfully, now there are a lot of tools out there that can help you with that. SimilarWeb definitely being one of them, whereby you have this incredible market intelligence data into essentially what's going on every website in the world. How much traffic they're getting, where that traffic is coming from, or if you think of traffic as like online customers, I suppose, going into a virtual store, what the kind of engagement levels are like, contact details, all that sort of stuff. You can actually get a lot of that within one platform, like SimilarWeb, for example, and you can actually utilize that, from an SDR perspective, if you're responsible for, generating leads. You can actually utilize tools like SimilarWeb to filter and find companies that meet that ideal customer profile. Right. So that will take some of the research out of it, because you'll be, for example, search could be, I want companies that are headquartered in the US that are receiving customers from countries X, Y, and Z that are, that have seen a 20% growth year over year in the number of customers, et cetera. So you can really actually filter down. And so you'll actually kind of know a lot more about your customers ahead of time, but than you would have done before, versus going on Google and finding top 100 e-commerce companies. We'll just get like a list of names. Then you will have to do your research, because there's no context behind it. Right. But actually utilizing market intelligence data to get about those insights beforehand is crucial. And then from there you can kind of utilize that data in your consultative selling approach. So I would say it depends on obviously who you're selling to in the markets, but I think particularly for online businesses, you can definitely use tools like SimilarWeb to take a lot of that time out. And like I was saying before, what we have, this insights generator, which essentially pushes insights to you around what's going on with your client, how they're benchmarking against their competitors in certain markets, where the opportunities and potentially gaps are in their strategy. So you can actually kind of get down a couple of clicks of a button. So thankfully, it's somewhat easier maybe than
with my coffee pot at the library, right?
I think there's always going to be a little bit of an element of that, but hopefully a lot of that legwork will be taken out.
Yeah, that's great. So tell me about the top of the funnel then in terms of consultative selling. What is an approach that you feel really works well now? We do have a lot of tools. There's a lot of stack that we could put on top of whatever we're using for follow-up. But at the end of the day, there's a conversation in there that has to happen. So I'm curious as to your approach, what's working, and if you could share some conversion rates. Like if you talk to 100 people, how many of those actually start moving and advancing on average? If you have numbers like that, I'd be really curious. And also, lastly, has COVID affected any of this methodology of yours, or has it only enhanced it?
So for us as a business that tracks online businesses, COVID has obviously, greatly accelerated things, because bricks and mortar stores closed, more online businesses opened. And even as bricks and mortar stores are opening now, we're still seeing, you know, huge influxes of new online businesses opening every day. You know, I think businesses and consumers are definitely adapted in that respect. So the, you know, the online e-commerce market is showing no signs of slowing down at all. I think that in terms of an approach, I would be always thinking about the customer and having a customer-centric approach. So thinking about what's important to them. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you want to tie that into the solution that you have, you know, and the product that you have. But I think really getting into the mindset of the client is really important. I'll give you an example. So we work, as I said at the beginning of the piece, with a lot of logistics companies.
Right.
And there's one, you know, very global business everyone will have heard of. And they actually came to us a few years ago and said that we want to kind of transform from being just another service provider to being a strategic partner to our clients, you know, both at top and bottom of funnel. So once they kind of eventually converted clients being, you know, a genuine account manager in terms of being a strategic partner, but also at top of funnel winning new business. And so they're using our data to actually kind of talk to their clients about things that are completely outside of, you know, a normal logistics business. So, you know, trends within certain markets, you know, from an online perspective, what kind of keywords are driving traffic to their competitors, you know, things that would be, you know, very much outside the remit of a general sales conversation, but very much at the heart of helping to grow their clients' businesses. So it's obviously of huge interest and a massive differentiator between themselves and competitors. You know, logistics is a lot of industries are very competitive and very commoditized, and it can be very difficult to kind of differentiate yourself from a competitor. You might have a few USPs, but generally what will happen is that you'll, you know, start talking about what you do, and then your prospect will kind of drag you straight into a conversation around price. Yeah. And then you're kind of, you know, having to undercut very quickly. So, you know, for example, if you went into a conversation and said, you know, hi, I'm calling from company X, we offer the widest range of this, we're the fastest, most reliable, you know, prospect will think, well, I've heard this pitch 100 times already today, let's just get straight to a conversation about price. Whereas actually what a lot of our clients are doing very successfully is they'll open a conversation with, you know, did you know that X, Y, and Z is happening in your market? I can see two of your competitors are accelerating in this area. This is what's working well for them. This is what we do and how we can help. Can we have a conversation? It just completely transforms, you know, how you're kind of communicating with your clients. Mm-hmm. And very much putting them at the forefront of everything that you're doing. So I would say to your question, thinking about genuinely what is important for your client, what is, you know, what are the key challenges? And you might need to ask them that obviously in the conversation that you have with them, but really trying to get to the, you know, the crux of that before you start talking about your own products and solutions. Unfortunately, I don't actually have any stats on me on that, but there are, you know, plenty out there to talk about how a consultative approach will kind of help with conversions. You know, I was reading a, you know, one of the reports from Salesforce recently saying that about 78% of B2B buyers are now looking for a trusted advisor rather than just another salesperson. HubSpot, I think, or other companies are talking about how sales is really now rapidly and moving a lot more to be kind of data driven. This is definitely the kind of motion that companies need to move into. You know, to really kind of get ahead of the game. Because if you're just kind of stuck in your ways of talking about your products and solutions, unfortunately, your competitors are going to be taking a different angle and probably going to be a lot more successful in it than you are.
Does this also mean that when you become this trusted advisor, and I want to get into that term because it's so scary for so many people to know what the heck that really means, and can you quantify it, you know, or is it behavioral based? But I'll set that aside. The question I have is, because you are consultative, because you are approaching the conversation as a trusted advisor, are you naturally finding that you're going up hierarchy in the company and talking to more of directors, C-suite, VP, exec VP level? Because a lot of times, you know, even now with the SDR role, they're finding themselves way too far out in that circle of influence. They're way at the tip of the edge. There are people that are going to maybe be project owners, but they don't have the big strategic picture in mind. They have their little piece of the pie, and all I want to know is, can I get my stuff done? So tell me about that. Has that actually changed your approach in terms of the corporate hierarchy and approaching people?
Massively. So I'd say from a top of funnel perspective, what you're enabling yourself to do is multi-thread very effectively and speak to, you know, a broader range of people. So going back to the logistics example again, you know, initially when we speak to logistics companies, they're quite wary about, you know, why do I need to be speaking about, you know, keywords and website traffic and things like that, because these aren't the people that I'm generally speaking to. I'm speaking to slightly more technical, you know, shipping people. Right. But actually what they're doing is that they're then speaking to this person, but then that conversation is generating or opening a door to another department and another department and another department. So then the opportunity grows. So that's definitely effective from a top of funnel perspective. And then from a kind of, you know, account management retention upsell perspective, what you said is absolutely spot on in terms of kind of moving up the chain, speaking to more senior people. Because if you're offering, you know, strategic guidance in terms of how they can grow their business, you know, companies are going to want to, you know, invite you into meetings. And we are seeing this happen. You know, account managers are getting invited into more and more meetings to talk about these kind of strategic processes and how they can grow their business. And then ultimately what will happen is you kind of get to that gold standard for any company, which is where your customers become your advocates. So they're then promoting you to their network, which is ultimately where, you know, every business wants to get to. So without a shadow of a doubt, it really does move you up that food chain very effectively.
And to that end, another objection I hear a lot of concern is, well, I don't have the industry experience or I don't have the tenure to have these conversations. And I always push back on that, because I think if you have this insatiable curiosity to understand what makes them tick in their business, plus you are, if you love your craft, you're a student of the business side of what makes things better with your product and how that's applied strategically to the growth of your client's business. It doesn't matter if you've been in sales for 5 years or 50 years, you should be able to have a conversation at least at a certain level. And then, and only then, when they say, you know what, this is something that I think would be super important, I want to bring some of my folks in, then you easily segue to, great, you know, I'm going to now introduce you to my people because they're going to get down in the bits and bytes of how all this works. That model still is okay. But I think a lot of people they're just not comfortable with the fact, or they think you have to have an account executive or an associate account executive or someone that's a little bit higher up in the sales knowledge in order to transition to a trusted advisor sale. What do you think about that?
I think it goes back to what we were saying at the start of the piece where, you know, as a salesperson, you do want to be the expert in the room, and it's only natural. You know, you want to be comfortable with what you're talking about. I think coming out of your comfort zone makes you feel vulnerable. And that's completely understandable. But I think what you said there is absolutely right. I think, and actually my experience, showing a bit of vulnerability actually goes a long way. It shows quite a lot of kind of like genuineness, I think.
Definitely.
To be, you know, open and actually, you know, going into things that you're not necessarily an expert in and being honest and just saying, you know, look, I'm not necessarily an expert in this field. Obviously you are, but this is the data to show X, Y, and Z. You're not presenting yourself as knowing all the answers. You're just going by what the data says. You can kind of hide behind that a little bit. But I definitely think showing, and this probably goes into another topic, but I think showing a bit of vulnerability in a meeting is actually perfectly okay and maybe even encouraged as well. It doesn't show that you're underprepared or whatever. It just shows that actually in this particular topic, I'm not an expert. What do you think of this? Can you elaborate a little bit more? Mm-hmm. And I think actually what it does as well, my experience of speaking with other sales reps, makes your role a lot more enjoyable. Like, rather than just talking about what you do day after day, week after week to, you know, different people, actually kind of like diving into different areas and talking about different things, different markets, different trends, and actually thinking of yourself as a consultant is fun. Like, it just adds a bit more variety to your role, I think, as well as, I would say, elevating you and generally making you a better salesperson.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, if we're selling products, it's a given that we love our product, right? So now we need to figure out ways we can apply the differentiated claims of our product to the business models of these clients that we're servicing to figure out if we're a good fit or not. Because that's another thing you mentioned at the top. Are we a good fit? You know, and the only way you can determine whether we're a good fit or not is to dive into more of the day-to-day workflow life, what their goals are, what their future is, what they see as an upward path for them, whether it's in their job role or in the company strategically, how that looks. You know, we get into all those types of questions that have absolutely nothing to do necessarily with the product feature or the benefit of the product and everything to do with the person. And the consultative role includes the person. And I think that's the main thing that we've lost sight of, especially with all these tools, all these things, all these emails that I get still to this day. Our product does this. Isn't our product great? You know, it's like, no, it's not great. How is this helping me? Why should I care? You know, what does it do for me that I should stop what I'm doing and listen to what you have to say? And I think that gets into that area of trusted advisor. I mean, that term is so difficult to get your arms around. And so I'm curious from your perspective, knowing that you specialize in e-commerce, e-commerce companies, what does that mean, trusted advisor, to your people? How do they define trusted advisor?
They would define that as someone that is, as we said at the kind of earlier on the piece, having a customer-centric approach, putting the customer, you know, at the center of what they're doing, and just take it very literally. You are advising them on, you know, certain areas of their business. Not you're broadening the conversation from just what your product does to actually why they might potentially need it, and then how that will help them long term. I think what you were saying is really important about the, you know, the product fit. I think that for particularly for businesses like Similarweb that works on a kind of, you know, renewal basis. So it's not a case of, you know, making one-off sales and then, you know, that's fine, you ever speak to the customer again. If you're working on a retention basis, you're only going to get, you know, bitten down the line if you're kind of selling something that isn't a good product fit. You know, you're going to have unhappy customers, you're going to get a bad reputation, you're going to have a high churn rate. Now, obviously, there's issues in terms of like commissions and things like that. You know, salespeople are targeted on how many sales they make. Why should they necessarily care about whether it's a good product fit? That's the account manager's job. But maybe there's something that needs to be looked there in terms of, you know, commission structures and how salespeople are recognized. But it's definitely an important part of it. And what you were saying about consultative selling being about the person, it's all about the person. So to kind of change lanes a little bit and talk a bit about behavioral psychology, because I kind of find this really interesting.
Yeah.
Webinar with a company called Weimar last year, who are kind of experts in this field. And they were talking about the fact that as human beings, we have kind of two sides of our brain. We have a system one brain and a system two brain. The system one brain is kind of like the dominant force. It's the one that we've evolved over millions of years. It's the kind of caveman type brain, which is very reactive. It's kind of very, you know, very effective when you're kind of running away from saber-toothed tigers and having to hunt for your food, but not particularly geared for 21st century living. And then you have your system two brain, which is kind of the more 21st century living brain, but it's the much smaller part of the brain, and it evolves a lot later than the system one brain. The way that kind of boils down to sales is that when you're selling, particularly when you're selling an expensive product, or you're selling a product that requires a long-term commitment, it basically requires your clients to be really having to think about it properly before they make a decision. You know, generally B2B decisions, you know, take 6 or 7 decision makers anyway, so it's going to have to go to different people anyway. But when you're kind of engaging that side of things, you really need to be talking to the system two part of the brain, because the system one brain is very reactive. It makes very quick decisions. So if you're trying to sell a 4-year contract for something, you can't be speaking to the part of the brain that's only designed to make very quick, very snap decisions, because that's when they will just drag you into a conversation around price, because right, they're like, right, cheapest, right, let's go. Whereas the system two brain is one that's a lot more rational. It thinks more, it is more calculated. And the only way that you can really engage that side of the brain is through a consultative selling approach. It's by engaging them more rather than just talking about, if you're just talking about your products and services, that's going to be engaging system one brain. If you're kind of speaking on a more consultative basis, that's engaging system two brain. And that's why it's an effective approach, particularly for, you know, expensive products and products that kind of require a long-term commitment, is that you're kind of speaking to the more rational side of the brain, which is essentially what consultative selling is doing. So there's definitely method behind, you know, just this term consultative. I think it gets thrown around a lot, and it is definitely important, but that's certainly one of the theories behind actually why it's so important.
And that's a good delineation, I think, because the term trusted advisor is a term that's so vague. But if, and I'm a process person, systems person, so I'm always trying to get things into a repeatable, consistent type of process. So if there is a fork in the road with system one, system two, and system two is a series of behaviors, a series of experiences that you can weave into your talk track for selling, then I think, you know, practice will get you to a point where, like you said, there are going to be clients that are like-minded, that are in similar industries, that you can reuse and repurpose your talk tracks, your sales conversations. But the original build of it all does take a lot, does take some time and takes, you know, finessing and takes practice, and you're going to fall on your face and, you know, put your ego in your pocket because you're going to just need to talk to the next guy about this to improve. I mean, it only, and like you said, have fun with it. You aren't going to be the expert. I'm not an expert. I flub all the time with things, but it's like, you know, I'm here to learn too. And if we're not learning, then we should be retired, I guess. You know, we shouldn't be still in this industry because it changes a lot. And you're always learning something new from your clients and prospects. So you have to look at it that way.
It's absolutely a skill. Being consultative and being a trusted advisor is definitely a skill. And like with any skill, it takes practice.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, make a game out of it. Make a competition with yourself about, right, I'm going to step into my next meeting and I'm going to pretend I'm genuinely from a consultancy firm. I'm coming in as a consultant.
Yeah.
What is the kind of mindset? What are the processes a consultant would have? Obviously, they're going to ask lots of questions, the right questions. They're going to really need to dive into what this business is all about, what the problems are, what the opportunities are, because otherwise they can't do their job. So really kind of go in and pretend you are a consultant, really. You are, you can be, essentially. And, you know, like we said before, just kind of challenge yourself to, right, next meeting, I'm going to ask, you know, two more questions or three more questions. Just keep kind of pushing yourself. I'm going to speak a little bit less. I'm going to speak, a little bit less. Push yourself.
Like we said, smaller improvements, just micro improvements over time mean massive results.
Yeah. And I do think what you were saying before about it being a behavioral skill, it is. And I think that, there's definitely, I think, a value in recognizing that from a sales management perspective. So with things like, you know, commissions, they can be very much tied to, you know, quarterly numbers. You know, ultimately you need to hit your numbers, and that's the be all and end all. I completely understand that.
Yeah.
But the problem is, if as a salesperson, the only thing you're worried about is your quarterly numbers, you're kind of chasing your tail a lot of the time. You're not able to really think that far ahead. And these are behavioral skills that will, in the long term, have a massive impact. You might not see that immediately, because it might even, you know, prolong the sales cycle a little bit, because you're elevating conversations to different teams.
Right.
And having, you know, bigger conversations. So the sale itself might be bigger, but it might prolong the sales cycle, because it's going to be a more meaningful kind of relationship that you have. So I think that, and where I've seen it being really effective, is when salespeople, you know, promoted to do that, whether it's through kind of like monetary or just recognition about, as well as, right, this is your kind of quarterly target, this is how much commission you're going to get from the money you bring in. I actually want to see from the proposals that you're sending or the conversations that you're having, you exhibiting behavior X, Y, and Z, you know, asking these questions, being more consultative, taking this approach, and actually kind of rewarding salespeople that way, because that will encourage them to do it more. And then long term, I think that will then have benefits in terms of how much revenue you're bringing in.
I agree. In fact, one of my clients in Denmark, the CCO there, she's amazing, but she put together what she's calling a maturity index, and it's rated on 8 different areas of sales maturity. And some of that is how engaging you are with the client, how often you're having dialogue with them about certain topics, when you, whether you bring them together for business reviews, things like that. So it's definitely looking towards the skill aspect and not really concerned about, did you close this business in Q1 or Q2? And she's been incorporating that slowly over time. So what's happening with that company is the enablement side of life is not just training, it's training and then coaching. And the coaching piece is what is elevating all of our reps into trusted advisors, really. It's getting to that point. And they stay longer, they're happier, and they're branching out and making recommendations. So we have different levels of maturity, just like the Bloom's taxonomy of learning. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but it starts with a newcomer and it ends with an expert. And the newcomer is someone coming straight in from maybe out of college or a second job in sales. And then the expert is actually challenging the products that we deliver, the delivery mechanisms, whether or not we should have additional feature sets. I mean, they get into the weeds with the product growth and product alignment because they know the businesses so well of their clients. So it's super exciting. And I haven't seen that here in the States, but she's from Europe. So I think there's a little bit more emphasis on the quality. I'm sure I'm going to put my foot in my mouth here. Quality of the sale in Europe than here. It's more like get the deal in and we'll worry about it later. So I would like to end this by, you know, giving people an idea of, you know, it says SimilarWeb up there. We're on video the first time. This is kind of weird, but excited about that. How can they get a hold of you, Simeon? And where should they start if they want to go down this path of leveraging metrics, leveraging this trusted advisor, behavioral? Where would you point people to start?
So people can feel free to reach out to you on LinkedIn directly. I'm happy to kind of have more of an in-depth conversation into this. Visit similarweb.com obviously to get some more information. But yeah, definitely happy to speak on the interview directly.
Okay, very good. Very much appreciate your time. Sorry your earbuds ran out. And I will make sure that on your webpage that we're putting together for you, we'll have all the contact information for you. Thank you so much. Take care.